J7. Number 3A.
All right, so we just continue on from where we left off this afternoon, this morning, and what we want to keep coming back to as a reference is the Gospel of John. I am interested in that because it is the subject that Max Kapler is taking for the summer schools 1990, past and now present 1991. And again, we know it's not to teach the structure of it, but just to keep talking about the general big vision that John had of the New Jerusalem, a new vision of reality, just according to our standpoint of observation. Therefore, we can see now that the responsibility begins to fall more and more on our shoulders and on how we perceive reality, not the evil empire out there. But it's much more that Jesus beheld in science. He let science inform him about what was real and what was unreal. It's just like, even in the physical sciences today, we have to let science inform us on what is real. By going out from sense testimony, they said that the Earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around the Earth. Until in scientific discovery, science informed us, and the physical sciences know that the sun is the center and we revolve around the sun. Or if we just went out from physical sense testimony, we would feel that standing on a railroad track that these two tracks would converge in a distance. And yet science informs us that they continue to be parallel. Or as we know, the example of taking a stick and putting it into water. It looks broken, so we would say it's broken. But science informs us, no, that it is bent just according to the water. And so there are so many things that if we went out just in our ordinary sense perception in the physical universe, we would see the world and explain it differently than if science explains it to us. So Jesus had science. He says Jesus beheld in science the perfect man. That's important. He let science inform him on the perfection of man. Where sinning mortal man appears to mortals, that mortal man was sick and looked sick. But science informed him that he was perfect. And that correct view of that man healed the sick. It's just a question of perception. So what one can see is the spiritual controls the mental, controls the physical. And as I was saying that, Mrs. Eddy says in the sixth chapter that the physical is nothing. It's just a belief caused by the mental. So that the physical sickness is just a false belief objectified. So the problem is with the belief. Not with the physical sickness. That's the effect of a cause, of a mental cause. And the mental cause is always the belief in some kind of sickness, which objectifies itself as a physical claim. So we have to heal the false belief, the false education. And that can't be healed by a drug. How can a false belief be healed by a drug? That's why in Christian Science, Christian scientists don't go to a doctor. That's misunderstood, saying, well, that's not, you know, those funny people. Well, it's not so funny when the world begins to see that the nature, the mental nature of the universe, and that the problem is in consciousness, are those false beliefs. And once those false beliefs are eradicated, then the physical effect goes, because it's just a false belief objectified. And that's what she says matter is just a false belief objectified that the universe is material when it's actually spiritual. So we're working with beliefs. And that's why in Christian Science, as I just said, how can a drug heal a belief? It takes the divine mind ideas to correct the false belief. And once a false belief is corrected, then the physical claim goes. So it's always the order in the hierarchy is the spiritual controls the mental, then it controls the physical. So in looking then at this Gospel of St. John, as an example, I wanted to show them that he also was showing that it's all in our question of correct reasoning. We know Matthew, as Max showed us, wrote for the Jews and the fulfillment of the Jewish prophecy. Matthew, just quickly, as John Dorley has shown us, and then, of course, Max has expounded upon that, showing us the various laws also behind Matthew, that Matthew then would take just the what we would call the word vertical. The subject of Matthew is... The subject, as we see on the model of being, is really the laws of interdependence of the Word. That's the whole subject of Matthew, is the subject of how life, the Word of life, is impelling itself forward of life, truth, and love, that law of the success mechanism, which impels itself forward as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that logical line of development of the spiritual idea, really the showing of Jesus's true origin, which was from a logical line of development. Then we know Mark is symbolized by the next vertical in the model of being, is the Christ's truth. And Mark wrote for the Gentiles in the Christ order, showing then the Christ is always the impact from God to man, showing Jesus was the Christ, the divine manifestation of God, really showing the translation of Christ to the human. And Luke is the shows us the structure of Christianity, as we have seen through the Dorley writings, and Max is supporting those writings. Is Christianity showing how love, life and love, and principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love through the Christianity order, then how Luke wrote for the world, for mankind. You hear that Christianity tone showing us that Jesus was the idea introducing Christianity for all men, really showing the demonstration of the Christ idea as idea man, as true manhood. Now, John, there's a complete break. The Gospel of John shows us the science vertical, that of science, divine principle love, with the law of interdependence of truth and love, impelling this wonderful structure here of the science order, which is just looking at mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love from the standpoint of principle. And John wrote for God himself. Now there's a break, do you hear? That Matthew wrote for the Jews, Mark for the Gentiles, Luke for the world, but John wrote for God himself, the story of God. This is what Max showed us last year. Can you hear there's a break? It's in the science order. Max showed us that Jesus' life presents the science of God, the interpretation of the Christ idea really as the science of God. But the main point is that he wrote for God, and he always wrote from the standpoint of God itself. Now, if we compared the synoptics with John, as John Dorley did and Max has done, we see that synoptics, those are the Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the synoptic gospels. Syn means together, and optics means to see. That when you see those gospels together, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in comparison with John, you'll see that the synoptic gospels relate the history of Jesus, whereas the Gospel of John relates the history of God, where the synoptic says that Jesus operates, John says that Jesus is God in operation. Whereas the synoptic shows that Jesus was the Christ, John is showing that it's God itself is the impulsion behind Jesus' demonstration. Therefore, it's showing that where Max showed that where the synoptic showed that Jesus was the Son of Man, in John, Jesus was the Son of God. Or in the synoptics, Jesus projects perfect manhood or humanhood. In John, it's showing God's ideal. There's just all, in the synoptics, Jesus is, it shows Jesus' demonstrations. In John, it's the demonstration of principle. It's principle's demonstration. So what we see then, just to recapitulate then, that Jesus in the synoptics was the way and form of living. Where in John we see that it's about how God himself is revealing itself as a scientific way, where we ourselves in our consciousness can go from a human perception of reality into a spiritual perception of reality. See, so the synoptics are always talking about Jesus's way of living. Now John's going to show us our way of living, how we do it, the scientific way that we make it to be the Son of God, just as Jesus did. Jesus says, I am the way, as Matthew, Mark, and Luke show. Follow me. John shows how we follow him, God's way of following. So we can see then that John now is going to always reason from God, always reasoning and thinking from the Father, with our birthright as the mind of Christ, where from that standpoint of God, it's really thinking from God with the mind of Christ, and from that standpoint, it's God demonstrating itself. And another big point of John is that that mind of Christ really is something that is revealing itself and showing us that that mind of Christ is interpreting the universe. So John never will leave that standpoint of true reasoning, as Mrs. Eddy showed, reasoning from cause to effect, just over and over, get it in our consciousness. Reasoning from cause to effect, we begin with mind, which can only be understood through its idea and can never be known through its opposite matter. Do we hear the melody? That's nice. Now, John, as I mentioned, does show us, as Max showed us last summer, in his gospel being so different from all the other gospels, he then wants to show us, and if we just looked at the prologue as we saw last summer, terrific vision, as Max brought out, just within the prologue. It really, you know, in the prologue to music or to any good book in literature, you always get the introduction of that which is going to follow. Well, the same with John itself. It has a wonderful prologue. And Mrs. Eddy, in writing her texts, has these prologues also that she gives a general introduction of what's going to follow. Well, John is looking out from the 5,000-year period in biblical history, and he's looking at the 7,000-year period. That was his vision of the 7,000-year period of love, that realm of peace, of the self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting system, of love as truth, where the mind of Christ perceives perfection, that we've got to go out from the mind of Christ, from the one mind to see perfection, love is truth. And also in the seventh day, he saw that vision of the seventh day of love is love, perfection accepted. It's one thing to have love is truth, he shows, which is to have the mind of Christ, which is always focusing on perfection, isn't it? We can do that. But the big point is to accept that perfection. We could see the perfection with the mind of Christ, but do we accept that divine infinite calculus into our life? And that's what John says. Now accept, and thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. That's what Mrs. Eddy says. So the Gospel of John is showing the necessity of those two points of the seventh day. So his vision is of divine science, a seventh day of love. And it is from that standpoint that Mrs. Eddy shows in talking about that seventh day. She said that the spiritual creation was the outgrowth, the emanation of his infinite self-containment and immortal wisdom. This is wonderful. This is that never leaving the one valued logic of spirit. always staying within the infinite one. How can there be becoming development, as we'll be doing this afternoon, the eight ordered steps to our oneness with being? How can there be ascending within isness? I mean, if something is, how can it become? You see, this is where the creationists and the scientists in the world are having their problems. The creationists say, well, there's no evolution. And if you're an evolutionist, off with your head, because this is not right. In fact, they'll call it evil sometime. I mean, they get so radical and not believing in evolution, because they take the theory God created everything and it's all good and it's all here and it never evolved. The question of being is. Then you have the evolutionists that say, no, we evolve. It's both. Both are right. And that's what John wants to show. And Mrs. Eddy says in this wonderful statement, and in the prologue, it sets the whole key of the whole gospel in this one sentence. The spiritual creation was the outgrowth, the emanation. Do you hear unfoldment? The spiritual creation was the outgrowth, the emanation of his infinite self-containment and immortal wisdom. So within this infinite self-containment is always outgrowth, always development, always newness. So it means that within isness you can have development. How? By the infinite constantly restructuring itself, it always has something new. It's just like if you had a globe, and we looked at this globe and called it God. We could at any point our finger to Portland, and we would see the new experience being in Portland. And then we could go down to San Francisco on the globe. It's still the globe, but then we would accentuate, oh, we've made now a new experience down to San Francisco. We could fly up to Seattle, and we would have another experience there. But it's all within the globe. It's just different accentuations within the one being through restructuring of where we are. Or you could liken it to a kaleidoscope. A kaleidoscope has all the elements. Yes, they are. They exist in being. But when you restructure the kaleidoscope, you did get a different image. See, it's always new. Through the restructuring of isness, you get newness. And that's the laws of life, truth, and love. They're constantly blending together in the symphonic structure, as we'll see, giving out newness. And that's what John shows in that wonderful, wonderful structure. Is really the law of creativity. He shows it from the subjective sense of life is soul, truth is spirit, love is mind. But looking at it as it comes to us, we can also, as we know, look at this order for a moment from the standpoint of creativity, also from soul is life. You take soul, the numerals, life of infinity. Those numerals of isness, let's say like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Those are numerals of isness, as seen through mathematics. Spirit, they're constantly restructuring. The infinite calculus of spirit. You're constantly moving those numerals of isness like in a kaleidoscope. Spirit. Truth, and they're always bringing out a new form. Truth. And that form already exists in mind and in the plan of love. So John is showing real creativity is going on within the infinite self-containment through the restructuring of those identities of being. Big vision. And in the world they talk about creativity isn't out of nothing comes something, but it's a restructuring of isness. So John, that's one of the points. Then the next big point we already saw that he was talking about the logos, which is then the word, which is actually then this eternal development of the infinite calculus of spirit, the eternal development of the laws of the word of life, the Christ truth, Christianity as love, and science, the divine principle love. But what is wonderful in this prologue is it shows that within being itself, we can learn. So what we see through the law of the Christ at work here is what we saw through the law of the translation and retranslation on page 115 in the textbook, the scientific translation of immortal mind. Principle comes to us and seeks us out. Mind seeks the mind in us. Spirit seeks the spirit in us and so forth. So the first translation is happening first. Principle is coming from us out of this infinite self-containment. It always is presenting what it is. But that has an impact. When the descent comes down within oneness, it has an impact to make us ascend. Those are just symbols or words to say when we feel the impact of mind coming to us, we drop our ignorance to seek mind, huh? And to be mind-like. When spirit comes down to us, we turn around and seek to be spirit-like. When soul comes to us, we turn around and seek to be soul-like. It forces us that. And that looks like an ascending way. So that's where we get. In the letter, you get the self-educating system of the laws of life, truth, and love, where those laws are coming down to seek us. But they cause the, how do I become one with reality, you see? It makes us then seek God, which is a step-by-step process. And to teach this subject without teaching the second half is not Christian Science. And again, I see a danger. There's many dangers always within a subject. But one of the big dangers now in teaching the 7,000-year period, and especially going out from the Gospel of John, is to feel this wonderful realm of oneness by studying the Gospel and Mrs. Eddy's writings also. I mean, this is the subject. I'm only taking John now as an illustration of the 7,000-year period of love. To feel this and understand this wonderful realm of the infinite calculus of spirit and staying at the focal point of spirit in the dimension of love, in the self-operating cybernetic system, and thinking, now this is everything that's fine, and as I said, let's go live it up. That's where the danger of spirit fatalism and mysticism come in, because then we would go and not do the ascending way of through science and understanding, step by step, throw off the old education and put on the new education and ascend our way up to see the world differently. Otherwise, we're just taking it on belief and faith that the world is in oneness. Again, it's just back to old religion, isn't it? On blind belief and faith. But and Mrs. Eddy, before she passed, dictated this article on called Principle and Practice that Max has reproduced in the back of his booklet, Why Study Science Since the Science. And she says, she wrote in 1910, it appeared in 1917 in the Christian Science articles, but she says, unless belief becomes faith and faith becomes spiritual understanding, Christian Science and its practice is going to be lost again. And she says, what good is it to say to the sick, God is all, dear, or God is love? She says there's a way of science and understanding to show the step-by-step way to it. So she said a wonderful thing also along these lines that they have reproduced in We Knew Mary Baker Eddy, the series that Boston puts out and I've had since a child. Mrs. Eddy once gave a class and said, well, I've taken you up to the mountaintop and I've shown you the view. That would have been the view of love, is the seventh day that John is showing. And then she says, and now you must work your way up to it. See, she never left it with just what is reality, but now how do I become one with reality? And over again, she will, as you saw, said it was education and that Christian Science had to be taken as students of the textbook. And what I noticed when going through the manual work with Kapler's book on Christian government, its scientific evolution, Mrs. Eddy, in the manual, provides very, very, very little amount of space for teachers. Very, very small. You look at that and see that she didn't have a lot of teachers, only a very few. Did she provide for, in considering the big organization that followed, the provisions there are for a very, very, very few, because she didn't want it to become inspiration that going to listen to lectures. She took it away from the lectures by religionists, remember, and gave them the lesson sermon, because she didn't want it to be lectures on the vision of a teacher, but to be taught through the textbooks of the Bible and the textbook. They're the ones that teach us. They're the ones, and they teach us in an ordered way, in an ordered unfoldment. So she put great accentuation on us being students and learning ourselves. Oh, there's so many references. If you just look up what she says about students, she's constantly will be saying something like in Science and Health, where she says, in Latin, the word rendered disciple signifies student, and the word indicates the power of healing was not a supernatural gift to those learners, but the result of their cultivated spiritual understanding of divine science. See, to one born of the flesh, it must be cultivated. And then she goes on and says, teach your student that he must know himself before he can know others and minister to human needs. And then, of course, over and over again, she will say then, although this volume, meaning Science and Health, contains the complete science of mind healing, never believe that you can absorb the whole meaning of the science by a simple perusal of this book. The book needs to be studied, and the demonstration of the rules of scientifically healing will plant you firmly on spiritual ground of Christian science. And she says in the textbook, strict adherence to the divine principle and rules of the scientific method has secured the only success of the students of Christian science. And then what's always important in an educational system is that it's been practiced and tested. And she says, since the author's discovery of the might of truth in the treatment of disease as well as sin, her system had been fully tested and had not been found wanting. And in the preface, the time for thinkers has come. So St. John, we will see as soon as I switch the cassettes, how he provides that ordered ascending way for the educational process also.